Welcome to the Action Drug Rehab Hour here on KHTS, your local hometown station. It's good to be here. Wow, we got some beautiful weather, huh? Don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Nice out there.
Just wait till next week.
Except for you shared something, Austin, that didn't make me really happy. We're going from freezing to hot.
Yes. So in L.A., it's going to be 90 degrees next week. In Santa Clarita, it's going to be upper 80s, low 90s. So you're seeing kind of the nice of it. The niceties, you know, of the weather. And,
yeah, 60, 70 is good.
You're seeing spring, and then you're going to get a preview of summer. So,
no, boy, I'm looking forward to that. Anyways, my co-host today is Austin Dave. I think most people out there knows him. And then we have Robbie Robinson, which is he actually co-hosts the show with me lots. He's the intervention specialist over at the Sheriff's Department. So we're going to be talking about that. But today, we wanted to talk about a lot of different stuff. You brought up first, and I know that we have people that want to call in today, so you guys just hang tight, watch the show, and we're going to open it up for call-ins first. But I've been looking at my Facebook the last few days, and it's making me almost nauseous because I'm looking at one person said I lost my sister and two friends. I look at somebody else, they lost a daughter. I look at all these people that are saying their friends are dying. And no matter what the heck we say, they keep going out and freaking doing it. And they keep freaking dying. It's really, for me, it's so almost cussed. It's so freaking frustrating because these people come into rehab or whatever, and I tell them, don't freaking do it. It's in freaking everything. And they go out and they freaking do it anyways. And then they die. So, I mean, I'm like wanting to reach into their freaking brain and turn whatever that knob is and tell them, you can't win. Nobody's smarter than this freaking drug.
I think the theme of the week is consequences.
Yes.
Take it, because I'm so freaking upset. I'm so pissed off.
It's a multi-prong approach that's failing right now, where you don't have consequences for action. So I'll give you a scenario. Little Jimmy wants a cookie, right? Goes to mom. Mom says no. Goes to dad. Dad says no. But little Jimmy wants a cookie. So little Jimmy puts his hand in the cookie jar, takes the cookie, good chocolate chip cookie, tastes great. Mom and dad come up and go, little Jimmy, why do you have chocolate over your face? And little Jimmy goes, well, I wanted a cookie, so I took it. Okay, little Jimmy, go play. That's it. What's little Jimmy going to do next time? Take two cookies, take three cookies. Now you substitute cookies for, Percocet.
Right.
And maybe little Jimmy, mom and dad say, no Percocet, little Jimmy. Little Jimmy says, well, no consequences. I got away with the cookies for my entire childhood. Let me go and do this. And little Jimmy takes the Percocet. But as you said, instead of chocolate chips, it's fentanyl. Or in today's case, drink. And little Jimmy, the consequence for little Jimmy isn't, go play little Jimmy. It's, all right, what plot are we going to bury little Jimmy in today? And, you look at that approach from the parental side. You're not seeing consequences from the parental side. And then they grow up, go to society, and then you look at what's, for instance, what the LA County Board of Supervisors have said over the last week and what they wanted to introduce tomorrow, which they're not going to, and we'll talk about why. They wanted to decriminalize a lot of different things and basically take people out of incarceration and say that they want to take a mental health approach. But you look at it and go, okay, so that's the removal of more consequences for different actions. But you look at that. And it's interesting because if you look at history, if you go back, a decade, people sold drugs, they went to jail. People took drugs or had drugs in their possession, they went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were, said, hey, let's serve out your time in some kind of care facility, whether it be a rehab or some kind of mental health, facility, and they were rehabilitated. That key word, rehabilitation.
But you had that hammer.
You had the hammer and you had the nail. And you basically had a system where they had to. There were consequences. And the consequence was getting help. You take that away. Now you fast forward 10 years to today where little Jimmy, who has no consequences from the parents, has no consequences from society in terms of how we're going to keep little Jimmy accountable.
Right.
Little Jimmy is going to do whatever little Jimmy wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it in terms of the Board of Supervisors, which they got a lot of flack for what they wanted to introduce tomorrow, so they pulled it. They wanted to say, hey, we're going to do a mental health approach first.
Right.
But where was the effort to do that? There's no proof or any efforts to facilitate any sort of mental health treatment or any sort of rehabilitation.
It was an idea. That's what it was.
Let's take away the consequences. Right. They're not fair.
Right.
We want to care first. But at the same time, it's too late for some of these people. The ones who are in jail, it is too late for.
Right.
But you're releasing people who we've done nothing to rehabilitate them when they were in custody.
Mm-hmm.
They were just locked up. So they're right on one part. And that one part is, what schooling are they receiving while they're in jail? The schooling of hard knocks, the gangs.
Let's get it straight. There is no real treatment. There's no treatment in jails.
No. And that's the thing.
But there is drugs.
But you're releasing people who have no connection with society. You're right. Releasing people who have no sense of, when I get out, I want to be a doctor. When I get out, I want to be a firefighter. When I get out, I want to be a veterinarian.
No purpose.
They have no idea of what they can do.
Right.
Because they have not been given an idea other than the school of hard knocks, where they're learning how to be a gang member. They're learning how to be violent. They're learning these things. That's what they're learning. I lied. There is school for them in jail, but it's a school of learning how to be more violent,
right?
How to survive on the streets in a way that, you know, it's either kill or be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we're giving them.
Mm-hmm.
Our taxpayer money is just giving them three hots and a cot. Right. That's it. But what about schooling? What about mental health resources while they're in jail? What about trauma treatment, where these people have seen a family member die, or they've seen their best friend die? They've seen a lot of death at ages where that's highly inappropriate. But what are you doing to reverse that?
Right.
Little to nothing. Yeah. So you're just saying, hey, the answer is to release them. Then they go on the streets. Then they become part of the cycle of fentanyl, trank, either selling it, taking it, pushing on to people who are, you know, ages 14, 15, 16. And it's not kind of a, let's scare you, let's shake them up, let's be the boogeyman. This is just what we're seeing as far as the cycle goes. Right.
And as you know, and Robbie and I say this all the time, people don't change till they have to.
That's right.
People don't change until the consequences of what they're doing outweigh the fun that they think they're having. That's where I have a problem, and I'll tell you why. Everyone I'm bringing into rehab, almost everyone, they have more consequences than you can imagine. They've overdosed.
Yes.
Many times. I mean, we brought a girl, and I'm not going to mention her name, but we're doing a series 3 of Addicted, which is your documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But this girl, I mean, was done. CPR was done to her the first freaking time she used fentanyl. She overdosed and had to be Narcan back to life. So all these people, they come into my rehab, and they're kicking, and they're crying, and they're screaming, and the pain is so freaking bad. But yet we detox them, and they go out and they do it again.
That's right.
So it's like, that's where I have a problem. You guys are getting consequences. You're freaking dying and being brought back to life, and then you're doing it again. And my thing is, I'm sorry, but nobody can outsmart this drug.
Yeah.
Not with what's in it today.
Yeah.
Fentanyl, you don't have you have no freaking idea how much is in it. Sorry, guys, you don't. They're not chemists that are making it. Now, I'm going to let Austin tell you a little bit about what trank is, or xylazine.
It's basically a drug that's
used
by veterinarians as a tranquilizer. What we're seeing is people are, and this is what we said back in 2016, this kind of has all the hallmarks of what fentanyl was when it first came out, you know, at least on the West Coast, 2016. You'd seen it, you know, really rampage, you know, different communities all across the East Coast, you know, Huntington, West Virginia. That's like the overdose capital of the whole country, where you see people just running back and forth, trying to treat these overdose calls when fentanyl started coming out. Now you add in this new one, trank, where you're really seeing a lot more in terms of the consequences of what we're seeing. More psychotic behavior, more potent drugs, more things like, you know, there's an Instagram account I follow called Still Brazy. And what he does is he's a still photographer and a videographer who works in the LA area and documents a lot of this stuff, and you're seeing a significant shift in the behavioral properties of people who are on drugs, people who are on stuff that's on the streets. You're seeing more or less, you know, we were seeing a lot of people just kind of, you know, fading out from the fentanyl. Now we're seeing people like zombies. I don't know if you guys know the origin of zombies in cartoons.
Fill us in.
Meth.
Mm-hmm.
The origin of zombies in cartoons was from people using meth in the 50s and 60s, and people said, hey, that is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Right.
Let's take that and make it into a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
They came up with zombies. So if you look at zombies, the properties of a zombie, sunken in eyes, you know, they're kind of, they're talking to themselves, they're moaning, they're groaning, they're unable to kind of keep up with themselves. Now take that idea, that notion of a zombie, and apply it to the real-life principles of someone on trank or fentanyl, or a combination of all of the above.
Right.
And you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing people sitting on the sidewalk, sitting on staircases,
That's right.
who are just don't, they're not there. They're physically there, but they're not there anymore. So you're seeing kind of like, for me, I'd say this is probably perhaps the scariest I've seen things in terms of, you know, the evolution of drugs.
And we thought fentanyl was bad. Now we're adding something to the fentanyl that's making it, I can't even tell you how many times worse.
And you're seeing kind of how it evolves is you see it mostly in the areas of like West Virginia, the coal mining towns where you've seen their economies decimated.
Right.
You see it there. And you've seen it. And we talked over the last week about drug dealers and how they prey on people who are vulnerable. And you're seeing it there in those communities that are ultimately the most vulnerable, where, you know, work is gone.
Right.
You know, they're kind of, they went from a boom town to a bust town, and they're going from, you know, doing really, really well to doing really, really poorly. And you ask yourself, well, why would they want to do drugs? Why would they? They don't want to. They don't go out there wanting to do it. They go out there wanting to hide those feelings of,
right.
you know what, when you have a boom town going to a bust town, you have a lot of depression.
That's right.
You have a lot of anxiety, and you have a lot of people who are basically, they have nothing left.
Right.
There are no options left for them. So for them, they don't want to feel. Mm-hmm. And so we have this idea of a couple of different prongs in the approach. One of them is, you know, what are we doing in society to hold people accountable? One.
Right.
Two, what are we doing in our homes to make sure children listen to their parents? Three.
Well, parents, just real quickly,
yeah.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I've been doing surveys for the past 10 years, and since cell phones and social media, the average parent spends between 2 and 10 minutes talking to teenagers a day.
And that's not enough time to really, you know, not necessarily scare them about drugs and things like that, but to even connect with them. To connect with them, ask them how their day was doing, you know, how was lunch, how was school, you know, how, you know, what do you want to do with your life?
Right.
You know, in Santa Clarita, we kind of do this thing where we educate, 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 but we don't necessarily kind of gear them towards something. We push them off a cliff when they graduate high school and go, hey, you know, I hope you can fly. Mm-hmm. And then you build up the anxiety, you build up the depression, you build up this, I've got to take my AP test, I've got to do this, I have to get into this college, I have to do this, I have to have this appearance on social media. You add in that social media pressure, and then
right.
the anxiety levels are sky high. So what are they going to do? What are they doing in the boom to bust towns? Self-medicating. And we don't talk about that enough.
Well, look what's going on downtown right now.
They haven't talked about it.
Look what's going on, though.
But they want to release everyone from jail, but not talk about
the number one cause of death right now downtown, in Skid Row, buses, and the trains and everything, is overdoses.
We have 150 tiny homes the governor is giving to each of these cities that have to combat homelessness. That's like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to treat the cause? You know, you're treating the effect. That's right. the problem. You're treating the effect. That's like literally going on the Titanic and taking buckets and taking the water out.
Right.
You're treating the effect. Seal the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Fill the hole. Treat the cause.
Yeah.
Mental health. It's the thing. That's what drives me nuts is, you know, you hear these things about, you know, what the supervisor are doing with this idea of taking people out of incarceration. But what have we heard on the other side? I mean, it'd make more sense if, hey, they've been ramping up for the last 10 years of mental health care and doing these things and rehabilitating people and then moving over.
Because people only change when either one of two things, when they have to, like we said, when the consequences outweigh the payoff or the or the threat of the consequence if they buy it.
Right.
You know, or the right kind of treatment. But we're talking about releasing people from jails and stuff like that with no real treatment.
That's the thing. Everyone talks about.
They're coming out with no purpose.
Everyone talks about living their best life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're listening right now, raise your hand if you're living your best life. And that's the thing. It's a choice. If you want to live your best life, put your best foot forward.
Right.
But for right now, you know, we're not encouraging people to put their best foot forward. We're just saying, hey, you can stand in place. It's okay. Society's going to take care of you. But in reality, we're not. You know, what are we doing for mental health? Right. I haven't heard anything. What are we doing for homelessness?
No, you know what the jails are.
Yeah.
The jails are
the world's largest mental health institution on the planet.
It's the world's largest mental institution on the planet with zero treatment.
Yes.
So that's what it is.
I've never heard of a hospital where you go in for a gunshot wound, they sit there and they stare at you and they go,
no.
What do you want for lunch today?
Right.
What do you want for dinner today? And you're bleeding out. I've never heard of that. So why in the world are we using these jails as hospitals when they're meant for the most violent? So I get that point. But at the same time, what are we doing on the other side to treat them?
And we have them. They're there. If we had a plan, we could be treating people.
And that's where preventative measures come in. Exactly. Like, you know, Robbie, who works in that side, he works to keep children from getting to that point. And I hear nothing about that in society. And if you do, it's few people who are working really, really hard, busting their behinds to try to keep them. But we're all pouring all this money in on the aftermath.
That's right.
But where's the money going on preventative stuff?
Well, I'm just going to touch on two or three real quick things real quick. I always say if there's no accountability, no responsibility equals no consequences. And you touched on everything that all three of us know and a lot of people out there that are listening and looking at us, do you know? I teach kids, I teach boxing and karate. I teach for free. The purpose of that is because I heard, it takes so much to, you know, baseball and, you know, traveling. Mm. Okay, now you have it free. I have several kids that really want to make a change. I have about four kids that are really serious with it. And I was telling some kids this Saturday, I said, when I tell you to be here, you be here on time. This is a purpose. Even if you don't become a professional fighter, I want you to learn discipline. I tell you to be here, you get here on time. The other three or four kids get here on time. They know what to do because I've given them a purpose. And as you said, Austin, a lot of people have forgotten what a purpose is because they were raised and the parents were constantly enabling them. So now when you come across these things, they're in a big vacuum and they don't know what to do. So all of the kids that I train with, it's a purpose. I'm out here in the park at Heritage Park every Saturday, and I have the kids run, blah, blah, blah. Four or five of them come there. One of them, his mother came to me and said he had issues of vaping. Young kid, but he respects me. I have a relationship with him. I pulled him off to the side and said, look, son, if you're going to be a good fighter, you can't vape. His words to me, yes, coach, and he gave me a hug. I knew that I was making a difference. I knew that I was getting through to him. I said to him, if you keep coming, things are going to start happening. But again, without, you know, even in the Bible, it says my people perish due to lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are perishing because the knowledge that they are being given is not sinking in because sometimes, not always, the parents are enabling them. They're not disciplining them. They're not talking with them. And so even when I train the kids boxing every Saturday out there at the park, I talk to them about life, what it is to be a young man, how to carry yourself, how not to curse, how to stand tall when you talk to people, when you're going for a job. I talk to them, and they listen to me. They are listening to me. My goal is to keep doing it until it really sinks in. But the other thing, when I was a probation officer, I had a three-prong method, and everything Austin and Kerry were saying, we had intervention, prevention, intervention, and suppression, either or. Suppression was the last thing that I did because I tried to cover every corner of intervention and prevention. You and I know no matter what we tell some people, they're going to do what they want to do.
No matter what we tell people.
No matter what we tell them, Austin, you, me, other counselors, a lot of the people are going to do what they're going to do. Why?
Because when we're done, hold on, when we're done talking, I want to hear from people that are listening, why is it that people keep going back to the same thing over and over again, expecting it to be different, knowing it won't? That's what I want to know.
And the last thing before we break is, Austin said, there are no consequences. The consequences are not as strong as what's given to them. You have to have consequences. And it's lacking now. The media portrays it. Everybody has to have a voice. Sometimes you have to be quiet. Even the Bible says, talk less and listen more.
Do you guys want us to take a break or should we keep going? When we come back from break, what is our phone number here? 661. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour here on KHTS. My guests, Austin Dave and Robbie Robinson, and we're into some pretty heavy stuff, huh?
We are, and that's the thing. A lot of people have never seen what we're going to talk about before.
That's
and
right.
And I hope less people see it.
Lead us into it then, and I'll do the work.
There's a lot of things that, you know, we have an idea of, you know, what are drugs? We also have an idea of what does someone look like when they are on drugs? How do they behave? You know, what we don't know is that we know at least 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe a dozen people who are on drugs. But we would never know because they don't portray it in the ways that we think they do. But what we want to do is we want to take a look at what, you know, what we're seeing on the street in terms of the actual substance itself, what it does, and typically what it looks like. So if you find something like this, not just in your child's home, because we're not speaking to just parents, this could be a spouse. This could be someone who's a coworker. This could be a friend who, you know, you see something suspicious in your friend's car. And, you know, you go and you say to yourself, well, I don't want to be a narc. I don't want to be someone who just tells on them. Then don't. But talk to them. You talk to them. You tell them, you know, hey, you know, don't come to them and say, hey, what you're doing is completely wrong and, you know, you don't know what you're doing and, you know, you're a loser. That's not true. What you want to do is you want to approach them in the way that you would approach them, you know, if it was something else, if it was anything else. Yeah. And you come from a place of love, which is, hey, you know, you love your friend, your coworker, your spouse enough to say, hey, we got a problem. We have a problem. Not just you. We have a problem. And we're going to deal with it together.
Right.
Just like it would be if they were homeless. If they, you know, were having trouble in school. If they were having trouble financially. Approach them in the same way.
If they were depressed and suicidal.
That's the thing. People don't just go out there and choose to do drugs.
Right.
It's masking something.
Yes.
They're trying to mask something. Just like when, you know, we're on social media and we use a filter of some sort to try to mask an imperfection. Or we go on, you know, back in the day, Photoshop, and you used to use a cloning tool to hide, you know, acne.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Same thing, except they're using it to mask something that we can't see that's going on
in
their head.
And you can't treat that till you get rid of the drugs, though.
Right, that's true. Can't treat it until, you know, you really look at it, take a long, hard look at it and go, they're having a mental health crisis.
Yes. Now, I know that we have some callers. Stay on the line, guys, while we talk. I just want to just really quickly show people something. I know the cameras. Can the camera see this? These are what you call M30s, right? No. They look like them. You would not be able to tell them apart. In fact, the person that I got these from was 19 years old. Family heard a clunk in his bedroom. Thought it was the dog. After about a minute, they decided to check, walked in the bedroom, and they found their 19-year-old son completely overdosing on the floor in seizures with vomit coming out of his mouth. Dad had to make a decision because he didn't have any Narcan, so what he did is he gave him CPR until they got there with Narcan. And the decision was, if I give him CPR, am I going to die? That's what Dad had to think. So fortunately, that kid's okay. These look like Xanax. They don't look any different. They're bars. They're fake. They're fentanyl. Here you got, of course, put heroin and that kind of stuff. Here, you were with me, Austin, when we took these pills. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention his name, but this guy overdosed twice in one day off the same freaking pills. They're pressed pills. You cannot tell them. If I put these down with a Xanax, you're not going to tell the difference. So where I'm going, guys, is there is no such thing as real pills anymore unless you go to the pharmacy and they actually hand them to you. They're fake. And nobody – you can't outsmart something you don't know. You can't see it. You don't know it. Here it is. You take it. If it's too much fentanyl, you're dead.
That's the thing.
And now,
yeah,
if there's xylazine in it, Narcan won't work.
That's right.
So you just die.
That's the thing. It's kind of like this. You know, you go to a bakery, your local bakery, local mom-and-pop bakery shop, and you buy a cookie, right? Apparently, I must be hungry. I keep using food analogies today. But you buy a cookie, right? And, you know, you go in, and they put peanut butter filler in there, right? Because it's like, hey, dough's expensive. Let's put some peanut butter filler in there. No one will know the difference, right? Except you have a peanut allergy. What happens? You die.
You have a reaction.
What happens when they don't tell you, hey, there's peanut butter in this or there's peanuts in this?
That's right.
You die. You have a problem.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the same thing. You know, you go buy these things on the street. I'm not saying go out and buy them. You buy these things on the street, you don't know that there's not peanut butter filler.
Hey, guys, have a Xanax. You can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
Where'd you get them? Oh, they're real. They're from a pharmacy. Not. How are you going to know the difference?
You can't.
You can't. So who's selling you this drug is lying to you. They're actually poisoning you. You're using something that's going to kill you.
They're preying on the fact that people are depressed. They're anxious. I mean, look at what
and
just
desperate.
Happened. We just went through a 3-year hell, basically, where everything closed. Businesses are closing left and right. I mean, I'm seeing businesses that have been here since I was a kid. They're going out of business out of nowhere because they couldn't make it through the pandemic. So you've got people being laid off in the hundreds of thousands every week. If you look at the news, all the tech sector jobs are no longer safe. Social media jobs no longer safe. Jobs in, you know, all these things that were the future that are, you're seeing these companies, hey, we're going to, you know, trim the fat and we're going to cut off hundreds of thousands of jobs in the last just a couple weeks.
Yep.
What are these people going to do financially? There's no job safe for them.
No.
So you're seeing kind of what happened with the coal mining industry where
there was a little unemployment and a little disability, mm-hmm. but that goes away.
But you know what starts to creep up? The less money they're making and the more they're seeing their losses, mm-hmm. the higher the anxiety, the higher the depression, the higher the terror of, hey, I'm going to end up homeless.
The more you have no purpose, the more depression comes.
And the more these drug dealers prey on these people who yes. are feeling this, like, hey, I've got something that's going to make you feel a lot better. Let's take a load off.
Yeah.
Take one of these.
It's a Xanax. It's for anti-anxiety. You'll feel better.
Well, mm. well the drug dealers are what I call neighborhood terrorists. Neighborhood terrorists or neighborhood predators. And these predators, as Austin said, are preying on people when they see that there's a deficiency in their life. So what do they do? I'm going to make a lot of money. And I can make tons of money off this. I can live big.
They don't give a crap about the people they're selling this crap to.
Of course they don't. But they are still considered predators, you know.
And the one thing we never really hear enough of is, you know, the voices in the community and those who have concerns. But we do have some phone calls here of people who are concerned about this. And I know there's a growing number of people, but we do have some people who do want their voices heard.
So I think we have some callers. So, caller, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello. This is Carrie. You're talking to Carrie Austin and Robbie Robinson.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes,
perfectly.
We can.
Awesome. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Great. We're doing good. I think I know who this is.
I think I know
yes.
who this is, too.
You mentioned me. In the beginning, that's me.
So, oh, what did I mention? I forgot.
I'm the one who had to be resuscitated from overdosing on fentanyl.
So, yeah, I knew who it was, but just a quick question.
Not a fun experience.
Just, do you mind if I...
Yeah.
Oh, go for it. Go talk. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, that was a very traumatic experience, but you know what? It didn't stop me from doing it again and again and again until I reached my breaking point. I was lying down on an abandoned apartment, looking up at God, asking him, is this really what you want for me? I had to change. I couldn't live that way anymore. I have to stop playing with fire.
No, I wouldn't call
especially
it fire.
With recent losses.
I would call it playing with death. And
yeah.
Go on. So the recent losses go on.
Yeah. So I'm really lucky to be here from overdosing 4 times and from losing my brother from the same thing.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Did you just set out to do drugs? Was that just kind of like your goal or what brought you there?
Well, it's always been a problem for me since I was 20 years old, but what really amped it up was last year I lost my mom and then my brother, and I lost it. I didn't know how to cope, so I just went to the only thing I knew.
How old was your brother?
Oh, he was only 27.
That's so sad. You know that we're all so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
And I know he lost his life from a fentanyl overdose, if I'm right. Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think he would say to you if he was watching you lying in an abandoned apartment, having CPR and Narcan 4 times? What do you think he'd say to you?
Oh my goodness. He would tell me to get my act together. He would be heartbroken. Nobody wants to see their sister like that. It's sad.
For you, though, you know, a lot of what people don't understand is that we all go through something. apples to oranges, yeah. though, but we compare our traumas, we compare our experiences, but we experience it differently. And for mm-hmm. you, how did you experience the death of not only your brother, but also, you know, the person who gave you life, your mom? How did you deal with that? How did you feel?
For that one, mm-hmm. for my mom, it was a little bit more expected because she had cancer. So I was a little bit more prepared rather than my brother when he overdosed. Yeah, that's...
You don't get to say goodbye, yeah. you know?
This is Robbie Robinson. I know you're dealing with Carrie right now and he's helping you, but where do you see yourself now moving? Let's move forward. Where do you see yourself now? I mean, you brought up about God, but mm-hmm. that's great, but where do you see yourself? How are you getting the help? And I know Carrie is helping you, but mm-hmm. the final yeah. analysis, you have to take that step and really do mm-hmm. something for yourself. So I want to hear, where do you see yourself yeah. now? Where do you want to go?
Yeah.
What is it you want to do? What are your aspirations? Because there's nothing impossible for God, you know that. But, I mean, you have to say in your mind, where do I want to be now? Tell us that.
Yeah. Where I want to be now, I can't do it without God. For me, I can't do it without God, and I want to strengthen my relationship with a higher power to help me, because I can't do this alone. I need a team. Like, for example, like the action team's helping me right now.
Yes.
But also, I had to surrender this time, like, to really be all in it and just know that I don't want to go back to that life anymore.
That's right.
Just a quick question. Yeah. Quick question. If you go back to that life, what's going to happen?
I'm not going to make it. I'm going to be dead.
For sure.
Well, and not only that, but that's the thing, though. Like, we talk about the death, and that's the end of the story sometimes, but yes. it's not the end of the story.
Right.
If you were to die, who would lose out the most?
Oh, goodness. My daughter, my family.
That's right.
People who care about me.
Yeah, you got a daughter and that loves you very much, and you got a dad yeah. that's already lost his wife and one of his childs. And mm-hmm. And you know what? You're a special and beautiful person, and you got so much to live
for.
You have no idea how good life could be. You already know how mm-hmm. bad. Let me ask you one quick question, and I'll let you off the hook, okay?
Okay.
The night you were laying in the abandoned apartment and you started texting me, what was going through your head?
Oh, my gosh. I don't want this life anymore. I'm desperate. I want to live. I don't want to die.
That's right.
You were dying, girl, that's for sure, wasn't she?
That's right, yeah.
So Austin and I went, picked her up, and more will be revealed about that shortly. But I really do believe.
Carrie, thank you for saving my life.
You're welcome, and let's make it count, okay?
Okay.
And we're proud of you.
You owe me
very
something.
Proud of
what
you.
Do you owe me?
Carrie says I owe him something, and that is sobriety. And
that's exactly right. What you owe me. That is it. That is all. That's all I want. Got it?
Thank you so much for having me on.
You sure, got it. Okay. Want to say anything before we terminate this conversation?
Just that we're proud of you. You know, we're proud of you for making a choice that's going to better your life, but not only just yours, better the life of your daughter. You're
going to
give her a future that she can count on and
that's
a mom
right.
she can count on.
Yeah, because before
right.
I can take care of her, I need to better myself first.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a saying in karate that we used to say, there's no need to be weak mentally or physically to have self-respect, confidence, and understanding. And then there was another one when I was a young fighter. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't curse, I don't gamble, and I don't carouse. And then my coach said to me, if you do that, that's good. But if you believe in God and do that, you're on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. See? So you have a path now that you know that you need to take, not only for yourself, but for your daughter and for others. And you may be the one that inspires others to stop.
Yeah. Austin, I think we got a winner here.
I think so, too.
Yes, I do, too. I believe it.
I think we got a winner here. I'm really proud of you, and I'm glad that we're working with you, and I love you lots. And I think we lost her.
I think so.
Okay. Do we have any other callers, or are we... We're on our own? Okay, that's fine.
See, that's the problem.
But I want to ask you something. Imagine, put yourself in this place, because I was there. Imagine being in a room in an abandoned place by yourself with your own thoughts, your feelings, and all your nightmares, and you're alone. Imagine, and you're strung out on drugs. Imagine the pain that that person had had. And when this person had started texting me, I knew it. That's why I called you. I said, we need to go get this girl, like, now.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, it's a really lonely place, not only to be in an abandoned apartment, you know, with no one, but it's a lonely place in your head.
That's right.
You know, you've got all of these voices who are telling you to do all these bad things, and you don't really have very many voices that are doing the right thing and saying, hey, you know, we've got to do something better. We've got to do something solid and build a more, you know, trustworthy foundation for what we want to do with our life.
Yep.
There's that whole, you know, the cartoon where you have the angel and the devil on your shoulder.
That's right. It's devil's pretty loud. The angel's devils, not so low.
No angels.
Man. Yeah.
Yep. And it, you know what? Alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease of loneliness anyways. Mm-hmm. And an addict or an alcoholic alone is in terrible company. On that note, we'll take a break. Be right back.
Well, good afternoon. We're back here with Kerry and my two other brothers here, Kerry Quashin and Austin Dave, and we're talking about the things of what's going on right now. We left on a note where we were talking to someone on the radio who had issues where she was found in an apartment, abandoned apartment, and she had overdosed several times. And we were talking to her and encouraging her to go on. She has a young daughter, and we encouraged her to live for herself and also live for her daughter. But the thing that really touched me and Austin and Kerry was when she said, thank you for saving my life. So this is what I tell people a lot of times as we move in, and Austin's going to talk some more and bring us some more knowledge. What are you willing to give up to move forward in your life? Are you willing to give up drugs? It is a process. I'm not saying today I'm going to stop. Are you willing to go through the steps in the process? Are you going to build yourself with people who can be around you that are going to support you? And finally, are you going to make that decision to take that, make a change? Are you willing to step out? Are you willing to put one foot on the ground and move forward? So with that, we're going to have Austin continue to talk to us, and Kerry and all of us, we're going to chime in. So Austin, go ahead. You were going to say something.
I just also, before you do, I just wanted a couple people that are listening. Lance, he's my clinical director over at Action. I've been working with him for, gosh, 20-something years, and what a good guy. He's soon going to be my graveyard staff. I'm just kidding. But but thanks for listening, Lance, and love you lots. You do some pretty amazing stuff out there. And I got a message from who was on the phone saying, you're the best. Love you. We love you, too. Austin, you're on.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, you have a good support system.
There you go.
But in terms of having a support system for those who are under the influence of narcotics or maybe struggling with something in terms of mental health, what do you do? You know, I feel like sometimes our first reaction is to lecture. You know, and we do it out of love.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, get over it. Yeah. It's not, you got to look what you got.
Yeah.
Worst thing you can do.
Yeah. Or I understand what you're going through, but you should stop doing drugs. Or this, you know, we lecture first and we convince ourselves it's the right thing because we love the person. And we say we're doing it out of love. But at the same time, we're not meeting them on the level playing field that they're on already. We're meeting them on our high horse and we're shouting down at them like, hey, look at you.
Right.
You know, I'm going to make you feel better by solving your problems for you. And that's not how it works. The one thing that we don't do as a society today, the number one thing we don't do, twofold. One, we don't put ourselves in the shoes of others. It's the one thing we've gotten away from. It's a me, 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 I.
That's right.
My life, my problems, you make me feel, you know, and someone's, you're talking to someone who's, you know, self-medicating using narcotics or alcohol or whatever it may be. You're talking to someone who's already going through something, but when you tell them you make me feel annoyed, you're annoying me because of your problems, you're just adding on. That's what got them there in the first place. Mm. The first thing you should always do in any situation, it could be a dispute with your spouse, it could be a dispute with your neighbor, it could be a dispute with your child, it could be a dispute with your coworker, it could be anyone. Listen.
Yeah.
even if you fully believe you are 100% in the right and they are 100% in the wrong, you still listen. You give them a platform to speak.
That's right.
You don't interrupt them. You just listen to them. You sit down, you take a breather, and you just listen, because you're going to learn things about them that mm-hmm. you didn't already know because you haven't given them the welcome opportunity to say it. You know?
You know, and keep your thought. I was telling some of my fighters, you know, I said some of the best advice and lessons you're going to learn are from people you have a disagreement with and you don't like. And the ones who do care about you will stand with you. I told, I have a nephew who's going through some drug issues and drug problems. He went into placement and stuff. And I was training him and he stopped. And so he's got a job. And I said, one thing at a time. So I went to see him today on his job. And he looked at me. He says, oh, wow, Unc. I said, I told you, I'm with you no matter what. Hell, high water, snow, rain, heat, I'm with you. But I do want you to do it on your own. I'm here for you. If you need the help, I'm here. I'm not going to lecture you. But you have to take those steps.
And we're running a little low on time. But the one thing that, you know, if we could leave you with something today, it's listen to that person.
Yes.
Listening doesn't mean you wholeheartedly agree with what they're doing,
That's
how
right.
they're treating you, how they've made you feel. It's just fair.
Yes.
As much as you want them to listen to you, you've got to be the one to give them that respect and that platform first.
They have a voice,
and
it needs to be heard.
And another quick thing, there is a difference between consequences and discipline, a big difference between consequences and discipline. If they are taught the consequences, then you can help structure them. But when we talk definitely about discipline, everything else is lost, and now we have to do this. No, yeah. We want consequences first.
And again, I want to end it to where we started it. Nobody's smarter than this drug today, guys.
Correct.
You can't win this deal.
Correct.
There is no such thing as recreationally using drugs anymore. There is no such thing as experimenting with drugs anymore, because 99.9% of the drugs out there are fake. So if you're experimenting or recreationally using something, it's called Russian roulette, and it will get you.
But the good news is today you can start and begin by taking away the need to use and
That's
the
right.
need to want them
That's
by
right.
listening, by having consequences, in understanding how discipline works as well.
Right.
On that note, till next week, I want a special thanks to Austin Dave and Robbie Robinson. You guys are definite heroes of the Santa Clarita Valley and a lot further than you know. So thanks for being on the show, and thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Definitely.